Let me just begin with the word of prayer. God, thanks. Beautiful are the feet who bring good news. Bless us today. Give us ears to hear your word. Amen. Well, preparing for this morning's service with our emphasis on missions, this week for the last couple weeks, I took a long walk down memory lane. I looked through some old pictures and flipped through pages of journals that I had written years ago, and I was surprised with just how many things that I learned about missions over the years and how many things I forgot, too. And although it's not possible to share with you this morning every single story or every experience that I've had or everything that I've learned on the mission field, I want to share with you a few things that I learned about missions and life in general, too, I guess. And in going through the many memories, one particular theme kept rising to the surface over and over and over again. And it's a pretty important thing that I learned, and that is that God is faithful, and He will fulfill His purpose. Always. Always. As a junior in college, I had the opportunity to go on a mission trip to the Dominican Republic. It was spring break, and being an education major, I was excited about the prospect of building a primary school, an elementary school there in a squatter community outside of the capital city of Santo Domingo. And although I came from humble beginnings, nothing could have prepared me for what I would experience there on that mission trip. Not only the level of poverty was something that I hadn't seen before, but there was a need, a hunger for Christ that sometimes gets lost here in the States. My heart was moved to the point where I almost changed my major to missiology when I returned to campus, but soul searching and wise counsel convinced me, stay the course in elementary education. The following spring, I was selected to be the team leader, the student team leader, to go on another college mission trip, this time to El Salvador, and this one had a big impact on me as well. We were working on a school, a fence around a school, and a clinic as well, and this only solidified the heart that I was growing to have for missions. That spring, I walked the graduation line and just needed to complete one summer course and my student teaching in the fall. And student teaching came and went very, very quickly. And like many college graduates, after it was all over, it was the middle of the year, and I wasn't for sure exactly what to do next. I loved the experiences that I had in the classroom, but in my heart, I was drawn towards missions. I was torn. I didn't know what to do. A couple weeks later, while walking through church one Sunday morning, a gentleman by the name of Bob stopped me, and he told me about a mission trip that the church was going to be taking to Belize and wanted to know, I'm going to drink here in just a second, if I wanted to go along. I explained to Bob, I can't afford to go on this trip. But he told me to think about it and to pray about it, and I'll get back to you. I didn't know that Bob's definition of I'll get back to you meant later that day. He stopped me again that Sunday evening at church, and he said, did you think about it? Did you pray about it? I said, no, Bob. I went to the Broncos game, and that was when the Broncos were really good. I went with my brother, and now I'm here. Well, he said, I was talking to someone this morning, and they said that if you wanted to go on the trip, they would pay your way. So, looks like you're all out of excuses. The group's task for those 2 weeks was to pour a concrete floor for a new school building. And the first day that we got there on the job. Mr. Torres, a short man with a huge smile, introduced himself to a few members of the group. And he introduced himself as the new principal of the school. Just 3 days earlier, the former principal had a nervous breakdown and had to leave the teaching profession. And so Mr. Torres was the new principal. But it also left the school short of one teacher. And in his introduction, scanning the crowd, he said to one man, he said, I don't suppose that you have a teacher with you, do you? Well, Howard, great man, I miss him. Our project leader, he'd probably been on 40 mission trips. He pointed in my direction and he said, you see that guy over there? He's a teacher. Howard called me over. I didn't know what was going on. But he and Mr. Torres had been talking to each one another, and they had already made a proposition on my behalf. You're welcome. So Howard told me of the proposition to teach the class for the next 2 weeks while I was there. Well, if you'd have hit me over the knee with a bat, I don't think you would have gotten a quicker response from me. Number one, I wouldn't have to mix concrete for 2 weeks, and that was good. And number two, I love teaching, and I wanted to be a missionary. And at that moment, it was as if I stood on the threshold of my future, and God opened the door, and he said, here it is. I didn't have to think a thought. I didn't have to pray a prayer. It was like a funnel effect that led me to that very moment in time. And I knew that this was where God wanted me to be. My life verse is found in Psalms 138 and verse 8. From the English Standard Version, it says it this way. The Lord will fulfill his purpose for me. Your steadfast love, O Lord, endures forever. Do not forsake the works or the work of your hands. In other versions, it says, do not abandon the work of your hand. I never, never want God to take his hand off of me for something that he wants me to do. Simply put, without God, I'm a nobody. Everything that I am today and anything that the world may accredit to me is all because of the grace and mercy of God. This summer when I was preaching, we watched as Jesus took ordinary men who the only thing they did was say yes to his invitation to follow him. And when I said yes to God's invitation to follow me and I will make you, whatever else came after that, I was willing to accept. Whatever else came after that, I was willing to accept. I gave up material things. I gave up job offers, even dreams to put my faith in my future, in the future, in God's future for me. To put my faith and trust in the one who had already performed the greatest miracle in my life, which was my salvation. We've heard the verse from Jeremiah chapter 29. Many of you know it by heart. For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. That's in quotation marks. He's saying this. I know the plans that I have for you. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. And all you have to do is say yes. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but all you have to do is say yes. Now, I admit that sometimes I forgot about this. I think we all do. For just a short period of time here and there, I forgot or I forget that God has this plan and this purpose for my life. And it's very specific just for me. And I've taken my licks over the years because of this when I maybe try to do things my own way. But he's always faithful and he always leads me back to his plan to fulfill his purpose for me. And for a quarter of a century, I've been so blessed. I had been so blessed to have had the opportunity to share Jesus with the people in a small country called Belize, and even in Guatemala in Central America. Another thing that I learned over the years is to do your job, not God's. In 2008, I spent a couple of months in the highlands of Guatemala. Beautiful area. Place called Quetzaltenango, locally known as Shela. I was there primarily to work on becoming more fluent in Spanish while waiting for God to open new doors. I introduced myself to Gloria, who was seated on the other side of the table. She wasn't my regular teacher that day, but she would be that day. She was going to be the one that was going to help me improve my Spanish that day. As she spoke, I stared intently at her mouth while she pronounced unfamiliar words, and I looked for a sign of confirmation in her eyes as I repeated back to her and carefully imitated what she said, the phrases and the words that she spoke to me. And as I practiced speaking with Gloria, I sensed that there was something terribly wrong. You see, her eyes were shallow. There really wasn't much life in them at all. Now, Gloria most likely didn't realize what she was getting herself into that day when she asked the question, "Do you plan on staying in Shela for a while?" Well, for the next 2 hours, I answered her question and a lot of others that she had, and I took time answering each and every question. I slowly and methodically covered salvation's message, stopping occasionally to consult my English-Spanish dictionary for just the right word or the right phrase. And this day, we were working on a specific set of irregular verbs. Words like conocer, which means to know or to be acquainted with, or ofrecer, to offer or to give, and conducir, to direct or to lead. Each one of these words had its own place in this heavenly message that was being shared. I used the word merecer, which means to deserve or to be worthy, to introduce the concept of grace. And I explained to her that the word agradecer, which means to be grateful for or to be thankful for, was not a big enough word to describe what the Lord had done in my life. Tears began to form in Gloria's eyes, and she excused herself for a moment. And God and I, we were having a good time. Gloria returned to the table. There was an interesting look on her face, a tired look. Maybe the look indicated a tiredness of living a life that goes nowhere. Perhaps even a look of hopelessness or helplessness. As she sat down, I looked into her eyes, and in the best Spanish I could, I said, "Yo sé, usted es mi maestra, pero conoces mi maestro. I know that you're teacher. I know that you're my teacher, but do you know my master?" With a puzzled look on her face, she questioned, "¿Quién es su maestro? Who is your teacher?" "Mi maestro es Jesucristo. My master is Jesus Christ." When the session began, Gloria could have had no idea what great things God had in store for her. She had been presented with God's plan for salvation. She had the opportunity to see the light. After that, I never saw her again. And I don't know if she accepted God's amazing gift of love and forgiveness. But my job was to plant a seed and let God take care of the rest. Something else I learned was that sometimes you get to see the fruit. My phone rang in my pocket as I was walking through very carefully preserved tombs in a cemetery in Quetzaltenango. Now, cemeteries fascinate me. My wife could give you stories about that, and she doesn't like it when I just deviate from where we're going and take a turn through the cemetery. Don't point at one of those tombs. Your finger will fall off. Well, I keep pointing and my finger's still here. I don't know what's... But here in this cemetery in Quetzaltenango, there have been instances where people get robbed of their valuables there. And something suggested to me that I might not want to answer this phone ringing in my pocket. But I looked at the number and I was curious to know who was at the other end of this line that I didn't know the number to. Something told me, because I'm me, answer the phone. Hello, this is Brian. The voice on the other end, it sounded familiar, but I couldn't place who it was. He responded, "Is this Mr. Brian?" "Yes, it is. And to whom am I speaking?" And after a couple of helpful phrases and hints and hearing the voice again, I said, "This is Ivan." His name is really Ivan, but for your sake, I'm going to call him Ivan. It'll help you out a little bit. Years earlier, Ivan was one of my students in Belize. He was very smart, and he knew it too. You know those teenagers, right? And he had a rough beginning in life. His mother had left when he was very young, and he was being raised by a father that more often than not could be seen passed out next to an empty bottle. Now, Ivan could have used his background and difficult home situation as an excuse for not being successful. But he wouldn't let his circumstances stop him from his dreams of one day being better than his father was. He worked hard in our school. He was named valedictorian, went on to high school and graduated from then. And for a few years after that, I lost track of him. I heard that he was a woodcutter in South America, someplace around Peru. Then one day, I met an older Ivan, leaning against a rusty hand railing on a bridge, a one-lane bridge just on the other side of the Belize-Guatemala border in a place called Melchor Domingos. Ivan saw me. He was standing with some other of his buddies, and he was initially excited to see me, but that quickly changed, and he hung his head in shame when he was trying to conceal the beer bottle in his hand. Those that were with him casually walked away, and it was just him and me. He began to apologize for the condition that I found him in. He said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Brian. This isn't how you taught us to live." Well, I was hungry, and so was he. One of us for physical food and the other one for spiritual food. I bet you can guess which one was the physical food. Amen. So I suggested that we go and sit down someplace and get something to eat. The smell of beer intermingled with the grill and whatever meat was being cooked on it. We made our way inside of a brightly colored tent near the riverside, took a place at one of the white plastic tables that was there. And I listened intently as Yvonne began to bring me up to speed on the latest happenings in his life's events. And as I focused upon his words, I saw a transformation happening right before my eyes. He was no longer that inquisitive, know-it-all teenage boy, but instead, right in front of me, was a bright and a humble young man, lost, but bright and humble. After about an hour or so, we both went our separate ways, but not before Yvonne Ivan told me that he was going to make some changes in his life. Well, it was years later when I was there in Quetzaltenango and the phone started ringing in my pocket. And I answered it, and it was Ivan. And he had told me that a friend of his, from all the way hundreds of miles on the other side of the country, he was in Quetzaltenango, a city of about 200,000 people. His friend saw me there. He called Ivan, and he called Ivan, and he said, "Hey, I saw Mr. Brian here in Quetzaltenango." And he tried to track my number down, called different people, and he finally did and called me that day in the cemetery, and I'm so glad I answered the phone. We met the following evening over a cup of coffee in a place called Café La Luna, the Moon Café. You see, I'm just throwing my Spanish in here, trying to help you guys out here this morning. And I couldn't help but notice the depth of his conversation and what had changed in his life and the sincerity in his voice. And he spoke of how the Lord changed his life. And between the laughter of reminiscing times gone by and seeing how God changed Ivan now these many years later, I was blessed to have had the opportunity not only to have planted the seed, but to be able to see the fruit as well. Reality is you don't always get to see the fruit. And on occasion, God reveals that to you, and it's fun. I'm sure you guys have seen that too. Another thing that I learned is that adventure lies on the road less traveled. La gracia. That's the Spanish word for grace. And it's where I spent 3 years of ministry while teaching and principal at the most remote school in the Cayo District in Belize. Now, getting to La Gracia Government School was no easy task. Have you ever been down that road? Yeah, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about here. Sorry. The worst part of this road was about a 6-mile stretch. But it may as well have been 60 miles. The uneven road kind of resembled that of a patchwork quilt. It would go from dirty brown gravel to hard-packed red clay to hardened limestone, and that process would just repeat itself over every crest of a hill. Never ending. And the holes. The rainy season wasn't kind to this road. Ruts and holes littered it. And if you swerved to miss one, you were going to hit a dozen others, so better you just hit the one right there. And one of these holes in particular was large enough to hide a small child, and that's not hyperbole, that's the truth. I'm sure that the view around you driving up this road was beautiful, but if you weren't paying attention, you'd miss the holes, or you'd find one of these guys over here. I just heard Jody whisper over there, Pastor Jody said, and that's the one that's in my office. So in case you hadn't heard, on the trip from February, it looks like, I'm saying it, I'm telling it, it's my story, now come on. On one of the trips back from Belize, apparently one of these Fertilances, that's the black one that you see there, one that looks like this, made its way into one of our bags. That's the only explanation that we can come up with. And we found it just right outside the door here at church early the next morning after the guys had come back from the trip. So fortunately, somebody didn't take one home that we know of. So I'm going to check under your sofa when you get home and see if it's there. Anyway, we have it in a jar in Pastor Jody's office. Dead. It's dead. Yes, it's dead. It's pretty. And it wasn't uncommon to see wildlife on this road. Seriously. Here you see deer and you see I don't know, a beaver occasionally, and you see raccoons, but that's not what we saw. We saw jaguars. And black jaguars. We saw tapirs, mountain cows. We saw snakes and gibnut. That's the one down there in the bottom right-hand corner. Now, it's not that big. It can get about this big here, about yay tall or so. It was called the royal rat. The royal rat because Queen Elizabeth II herself ate one of those when she came to Belize on a visit. True story. It's really, really good. I see you doing, yeah, but if you don't know what you're eating, it's good. It's good. Let me get back to my point here. It also wasn't uncommon to see people traveling that road. Not necessarily in cars, but on foot. And they're traveling on foot because either they have no transportation and they have these large packs on their back and they're either trekking in or trekking out, or somebody's vehicle had broken down because of the condition of the road and there's parts laying in the ditch sometimes. And these were always ministry opportunities, always. I lost count of the number of ways that God provided a blessing to people on these roads just because we were passing by. And while most people would prefer in Belize the well-traveled, I'm not even going to call it a smooth road because there really isn't a smooth road in Belize, but the well-traveled, well-populated areas, I've learned that there are ample opportunities to share the gospel and a lot more adventure when you go on the road less traveled. Now, due to the roughness of the road, and forgive me if I spend a little bit of time here, I'm having a good time. Due to the roughness of the road there and the wear and tear on my vehicle, we three teachers, Mr. Elias, Mr. Main, and myself, would spend 5 days back in La Gracia per week on the school's compound. Let me just tell you a little bit about what life was like for us back there. The school was nestled in a bowl between hills on two of the sides in this tiny farming village. An aging wooden structure, you see it there on the right side of the picture there on stilts, served as the teachers' quarters. Now at night, if you lay on your back, you could see the stars through the holes in the tin roof there. Water was pumped into the village about 20 minutes. Every 3 days. There was a privy there. For you young kids, that's an outside bathroom there. There was a privy, and it was on the right side. I guess this would be your right. On the right side, this would be your right, was for the boys, and the left side was for the girls, and in the middle was sandwiched between was the toilet for the teachers, and we had to replace that because the floor was falling in. It was poured a cement floor, but over the years of just the humidity inside of this of the tank itself or the outhouse itself, And because sometimes they don't always use the best material, when you walked in there, you could kind of see the bottom through cement that had been breaking away, and just rusted steel was there, and it was just moments away from falling in. True story. We took it out and we built a new one. We bathe by buckets, usually after dark, because we had this one neighbor who was kind of curious and interfering. So we would wait till the sun went down and bathe then. For meals, we went down the hill to a lady, Doña Olga. Went to her house. Meals were always great, and it was always the same. Breakfast and dinner were always the same. It was always some beans, sometimes some eggs, and corn tortillas that just came off the fire hearth. She had no stove inside. It was all burning wood, and it was great. It was great. She helped us as much as we helped her. We paid for our meals, and that provided some much-needed income to that single mother. Living in this village, it was rugged. Now, I'm not talking about camping. Some of you sound like, that sounds like camping. Yeah, you get to go home after you camp. This wasn't camping. This was living. In all of our Western modernization, one thing that we lose sight of sometimes is the fact that most of the world still lives this way. And I would argue, too, if you've never lived this way before, you really haven't lived. Now, for the most part, the village was calm and quiet in the daytime. The farmers would go out to their fields, and usually the only sounds in the village were those of the students in the classroom or playing in the yard. But after the sun went down, it was a different story. The village had no electricity to speak of. No stores, no bars, just two churches. And these churches seemed to have a nightly contest to see whose sound system could reach the lost better than the others. You know what I'm talking about. Most nights they started in about 7 o'clock, and after we were blessed for about 3 hours, their generator would run out of gas, and we'd be able to relax a little bit after that. But traveling the road and living and teaching in the village of La Gracia wasn't only a challenge, it was a risk as well. And schools like this have been built in rural areas for a long time. They're built, and then they're pretty much just forgotten about. And what you see when you get there is the product of what happens after years of being neglected. It was always difficult, very difficult, to find teachers who wanted to serve in these areas. They're so remote, so neglected, and there wasn't any money allotted to fix your vehicle and pieces and parts that would fall off on the road. And unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that in these areas, the students were sometimes just as neglected as the dilapidated buildings. And over the years, it had become the custom in Belize for teachers who had been labeled as problems someplace else to be shipped off to these areas, kind of out of sight, out of mind. And if you want to keep your job, this is where you're going to have to go. The problem is that they brought those problems with them. They weren't out of sight to the people in the villages, nor the students under their care. I'm not going to go into a lot of specifics this morning, but really it was a tragedy what most of these students went through and what I found when I got there. But 13 years after first arriving in Belize, I readily accepted God's call to go back into this area and then further on to another area just like it, and then to another area just like it, to be his hands and his feet. And all glory to God, through it all, lives were changed. Salvation was found. what was neglected wasn't neglected anymore, and we found ways to bring help to these villages that needed them. John Piper wrote a book, Risk is Right. And in his book, he said, a choice lies before you. Either waste your life or live with risk. Either sit on the sidelines or get in the game. After all, life was no cakewalk for Jesus, and he didn't promise that it would be any easier for his followers. I had two more stories. Are we good? Nobody sleeping yet? Another thing I learned is that praising God opens heaven's doors. Penny, thank you for letting me change the song this morning. When I first, you'll see why here in a minute. Pastor Jody already shared with you about his experiences a couple days ago with this song, Open the Eyes of My Heart. When I first went to Belize, I was a teacher and a principal at Howard Smith Nazarene School. Apart from this one, probably the best job I ever had. Seriously. It was located in the border town of Benca Viejo, right on the Belize-Guatemala border. And once a week, the middle and older students of the school would go down to the Nazarene church in town to hold chapel services. But as time went by, a new compound was opened, which took us farther and farther away from the church, and the school's population by this time had grown to over 500 students. Now, fitting all of us inside of a church and walking the extra distance was no longer going to be the best option for us, especially for the younger children. So what teachers did is they began to pair up the classes at the different grade levels, and they would hold chapel services there in different classrooms simultaneously. And this was okay, but obviously there was distractions from the noises from the other classes, conflicting noises. And it seemed to lack that togetherness that we had when we were in church, all in the same place. Now, Miss Jackie, one of our seasoned teachers, she approached me one day with an idea. She said, what if we all gathered together in the compound for chapel each Friday, just before lunch? Well, we tried it enthusiastically, and it worked. There was a problem, however. With so many people in the open air, it was difficult to hear everything that was going on. What we needed, we thought, were some speakers. Now, if you've gone shopping in Belize before, you know that you really can't buy anything cheap in Belize. You can buy cheap stuff, but it's going to be expensive too. What we needed to do is we needed to get speakers from outside someplace, and Guatemala City was an option for us. And by the following Friday, God had provided. We had a brand new amplifier, a microphone, and some speakers. It was grand. 500 children hearing the word of God and worshiping him every week. And each of the 17 teachers would take their turn in leading chapel. And it seemed like each one of the chapel services grew us closer and closer to God. His spirit was moving in our schools, moving in our families, moving in our community. And then one day, while we were praising him, something amazing happened. We were singing a more upbeat version than the one that we were singing this morning of Open the Eyes of My Heart. And it was booming through our speakers. And this song was one of the children's favorites at this time. And they wanted to sing it every week, sometimes twice or three times a week. And in the middle of this song, our school secretary received a phone call from a Catholic high school about two blocks away. They asked us if we could, they politely asked us if we could turn our speakers down. They were in the middle of Mass, and it was distracting to their students, making it hard for them to concentrate. And we always had a good working relationship with this high school. We always did. We recommended most of our students go to this school because they were good academically and they had good discipline. And we wanted to be good neighbors. So we turned our volume down just a little bit. To compensate, however, we're just going to have to sing a little bit louder. And the students, they wouldn't relent. They wanted to sing it, and then they wanted to sing it again. I came to find out later that it wasn't just our students who were singing it. It wasn't just our speakers that prompted the phone call from the Catholic school, but some of our former students who were now students at the Catholic school heard what was going on, and because they knew us and knew our songs, they were singing that song in the middle of their mass, and I don't think it was making Father John very happy. Open the eyes of my heart. I looked at my clock and it was nearing lunchtime, kind of like it is right now. Some parents had already started to gather outside of the fence to pick up their children and to walk them home, but God was on the move. Not just that day, lots of days, every day. He had another plan. I don't want to get into any numbers competition here with the Wrights who shared earlier, but there was a lot. Let's say over 150 children who gave their hearts to Christ that morning. It was awesome. It was amazing. We cried out, "Open the eyes of my heart." We're praising him, and that's what he did, and he opened heaven for us. Coming to an end here now. Whew, somebody said that. I heard that. Who was that? Was that you, Matt? I can't share everything, but I'll share this last one with you here. One thing I learned, which still holds true today, is that smiles can break down barriers. Once on a mission trip to northern Peru, our flight out of Lima was delayed. And by the time the four of us arrived at a place called a fairly large city called Piura, in the middle of the night, we were about 4 to 5 hours late. We didn't know who we were going to meet. We only had contact via email at the time. And as we were coming down a flight of stairs from the airplane, approaching the waiting area, we saw several people with their faces against the window looking out, and they're waving with huge smiles on their faces. And we're looking around like, who's the celebrity here on the plane? Come to find out, it was us. We weren't expecting necessarily to find anybody there at 3 o'clock in the morning. But there were. We were the ones that they thought of as celebrity. Now, the people that we were going to serve had never had a missions team before. They never had anybody come down to help them. And they felt it so strange that somebody from the United States would come to help them out. And we didn't know them, and they didn't know us. And several people from this group had traveled over 200 miles and then had to wait an extra 5 hours until the middle of the morning just to greet us. And that was the only time that we saw some of those as they went back to their homes. But because they were part of churches in the area, they just wanted to show up and to greet us. One of us, me in the group, spoke a little Spanish, and none of them spoke any English. But the language that we could all understand, that unspoken language, was a smile. To me, it seems like every day, God gives us something to smile about. The overwhelming joy that should be in every Christian's heart when shared with others touches hearts, creates lifelong friendships, and makes a difference for the world. Now, despite language and cultural barriers, my life has forever been changed through the smiles and connections that I have made over the years. And they didn't end when I left Belize. I'm still on the mission field, this time in Roanne, Indiana. And the focus that we have with missions isn't just found across the seas. Missions can be found across the street or even across your dinner table. It's up to us to daily share what God has so richly given us with the world who so desperately needs to hear from Him. As we bring our service to a close, I want to end with this quote from Guy Dowd. He says, "Your life is a letter that is being read by everyone. A letter not written in ink, but written by the Holy Spirit on the tablets of human hearts." That's missions. We'll ask the singers to come forward. That's all I've got for you right now. Maybe we could do this again next year and you can hear some more stories. You'll have to let Pastor Jody know about that. God's good. Always. Everywhere. He's good this morning. He was good yesterday. He's going to be good tomorrow. Hopefully some of the things that I've learned are some of the things that you've learned in life. And if they're not, maybe it's some of the things that you can catch and go and share with the world who desperately, desperately needs to hear about God.